I know it is a lot to ask, Alvin, but can I get that deck of yeah from Monday?
Yeah.
Coming off that roadie. Yeah. To New York and back. Back weekends.
Yeah.
I need that. Welcome to the jungle. Nice to have you here. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Hope you had a great weekend and your week is off to a good start. I've got a good program for you. We are going to front load two interviews in hour number one, so keep that in mind. In the meantime, hit me up, 1-800-636-8686. Wild, wild NFL weekend. Major League Baseball playoffs, a number of elimination games in front of us. NHL is underway. Anything you want to hit on is fair game. 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. All right, coming up next segment, CBS Sports NFL insider Jason LaCanfora. Lots to cover with him. That's in 15 minutes. Later on, hour number one, a national baseball writer for the New York Times, Tyler Kepner. Get his thoughts on what has transpired so far. Yankees murdering the Twins, per usual. We'll hit on that and some of the other matchups. Speaking of the playoffs, second hour is wide open. In hour number three, LA Dodgers ace, Walker Buehler. He's coming up at 11:40 Pacific time, or the last segment of the program. So those are the interviews. I'd like to get you in here, 1-800-636-8686. If you listen to the program, normally you would know that on a Monday, I would start with a recap of everything that happened over the weekend in the NFL. That's generally how I approach it, except I'm going to save that for a little bit later on today because I've got a question for you. Question being, how was your Sunday? Because Jay Gruden's Sunday was not that good. Got smashed by the Patriots, 33-7 at home, in a game where his team went 1-for-11 on third down. Not say that's pretty embarrassing. I would say that's pretty humiliating, but it's not. It's the Redskins, right? It's expected. It's par for the course. It's who they are. It's what they do every damn Sunday. Again, it's expected. How expected? Adrian Peterson said this about the Patriots defense after the game. Quote, "They showed a lot of exotic stuff on film, but against us, they didn't really, you know? It was like, hey, we'll sit back here and we'll see what you guys do and allow you guys to mess up." End quote. That is a tremendous quote. That's brutal. I mean, really brutal, but it's fair. I mean, the guy all but said they didn't even try. They weren't even trying. Why waste any energy trying to beat you scrubs when we know you're just going to beat yourselves anyway? Why put anything else on tape for anybody else to see when we know we're going to knock the crap out of you without even trying? It's pretty insulting. Pretty embarrassing. But then again, what'd you expect when you've got a 4-0 Patriots team facing off against an 0-4 Redskins team? An 0-4 Redskins team, which is even worse than their record indicates. But you know it's especially bad when people aren't really focusing on the fact that you had a 7-0 lead and then gave up 33 unanswered points. Or when they're not too interested in the return of Colt McCoy. Or the fact that McCoy was sacked 6 times.
Here comes the blitz. McCoy back to pass. He's going to get sacked back at the 30-yard line. That's a massive loss of 11 yards.
Every single time they try to take a shot down the field, he takes a sack.
Redskins radio. And instead of just asking if you'll have a gig the next day, it did provide Gruden the opportunity to drop this zinger.
Nobody's told me anything, and I don't have a concern. I'll just wait and see. My key works on Monday. Keep working. Go attack the Miami Dolphins and plan on getting our first win next week.
That's what I'm saying. That's how you handle that. With a zinger. If the key works Monday, keep working. Your bad news, though, big dude. The key did not work today. According to the Washington Post, Gruden was called to the facility for a 5 a.m. meeting with Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen. And they fired him. 5 a.m. 5 a.m. They broke him off at 5 in the morning. They kicked him to the curb before sunrise. Lane Kiffin getting canned on the tarmac at LAX, allegedly. Cannot believe how cold that is. 5 a.m.? You couldn't wait until 9 a.m.? When you've been sucking for years, what's another couple of hours? Why make this guy come to the facility? Why even bother with that? Why not just do it over text? Then again, how relieved is Jay Gruden right about now? I mean, sure, he did have to wake up early to get to the facility, but now he can go home, get a nap, and start life without having to go to work at that dump ever again. This guy's second best day as a head coach was getting that job, but his best day ever was losing that job. Now, the crazy thing is, on November 11th of last year, Washington was 6-3. They were in it. They mattered. They were relevant. But they've gone 1-11 since then. And yes, there have been some injuries. And some of the additions have not worked out quite right. But Gruden was nobody's idea of a successful head coach. And things were terrible. One player told Josina Anderson, quote, "Gruden is a good dude. But you can tell that he saw the writing on the wall. Players like him. It just got a little too laid back here lately, and sometimes that can bite you in the butt. I've seen some things here I've never seen on other teams," end quote. Seeing things you've never seen on other teams does not sound good, but it does sound exactly like what you'd expect to see in Washington. Like, ever have a vision of a city that you've never been to, but you've always had this vision or this image of what that city might look like? I'm not going to say any cities in particular, but imagine that. Think of a city that you would think would look a certain way, but you've never been there. And then you go there, and it's exactly what you thought it would be. And I don't mean that in a good way either, right? Think about that. It's happened to all of us. Well, that's the Redskins. The Redskins are that piece of crap city that you've never gone to, never wanted to go to, but always had a vision of, but then one day you ended up there, and it was exactly what you thought it would be. You know, like you envision a crappy situation with a crappy coach and a crappy organization. And then you get there and you're not even surprised because it's exactly what you thought it would be. I mean, what did you expect? A well-run, well-oiled, perennial playoff contender? Hell no, it's the Redskins. Another player told Anderson, quote, "It was time. Too much laziness and stubborn bleep going on around here. Folks not taking bleep serious. Looking at Snapchat during practice. Come on now. You know who I'm talking about. Guys, we're talking about it. We'll see how it goes." End quote. Folks on Snapchat during practice. That's pretty strong. That's a baller's move right there. That's the ultimate sign of disrespect. Firing up Snapchat during practice. Like, could you imagine if that ever went down with, say, the Patriots? Bill Belichick would straight stroke out if any of his guys ever dared to fire up Snapface during practice. But apparently it was going on with the Redskins. And the only thing worse than a player being on Snapchat during a practice would be a coach being on Snapchat during practice. But as bad as all that is, and as terrible as Washington has been this year, and as ugly as last week was with the quarterback situation, know this. The problem is not Jay Gruden. I'm not saying that he didn't deserve to be fired, but I'm saying that's not the issue. That's not the biggest issue. We know what the real problem is. Gruden was definitely a problem, and I've got no problem with him getting fired. But the real problem is the guys who fired him. The real problem, of course, is Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen, and the entire trash fire of an organization that they've got going there right now. They have not won a playoff game since 2005. They have finished last or second to last 15 times since Dan Snyder took over. Doing what they did to Gruden at 5 a.m. is the ultimate rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic move.
Iceberg, run ahead!
I mean, hell, iceberg. Straight ahead. Well, you couldn't see that iceberg? Did you turn the freaking boat, man? That iceberg was like as big as the moon. Hell, even then, they couldn't even get the interim coach thing right. This really aggravates me. They gave the title to Bill Callahan instead of three other incredibly well-qualified candidates. That job could have gone to Jim Tomsula. That job could have gone to Tim Jomsula. The job could have gone to Jom Timsula. Totally jacked that up. But Jay Gruden is not the reason why people are not going to games anymore. Jay Gruden was not the reason why that was practically a home game for New England. Jay Gruden is not the reason they've been so bad for so long. That's on the owner. That's on the president. They aren't winners. In fact, by definition, they're losers. The team is nearly 15 games, 50 below 500 since Snyder took over. Bruce Allen is 59-89-1 since he arrived. So how is a new head coach going to change any of that? Why is Allen going to be involved in hiring a new coach? Better yet, why hasn't he been fired yet? And by the way, I am aware of the videos from a few years back that leaked this week. Interesting timing, don't you think? And if the organization had anything to do with that video or videos being leaked, that is the dirtiest pool ever. I'm not saying they did. I'm saying if they did, that would be the dirtiest pool ever. I'm saying if they did, just fire the guy. If you're going to fire the guy, fire the guy. Would anybody even know or care if you did? I'm not saying they did this, but if they did, what the hell for? To provide cover for yourselves? Yeah, well, if you did that, it didn't work. If anything, you've made this guy actually sympathetic. If, in fact, the team had anything to do with it, and I don't know if they did or didn't. Either way, the team called a presser for later today. But in the meantime, they did issue a statement which included, quote, through the first five games of the 2019 season, the team has clearly not performed up to expectations, and we all share in the responsibility. Yeah, we all share in the responsibility, but Jay is the one getting fired at 5 a.m. Everybody else sleep in and continue to be terrible. And the most amazing thing about me blowing out a hole open on Jay Gruden is I have more to say about this. Most Redskin thing ever. They did not meet expectations. What kind of expectations did you have? You have one good player. You have one good player, Trent Williams, and he wants nothing to do with you. And I can't say that I blame him. Terrible team, terrible organization from top to bottom. All right, when we come back, Jason Lockenfora joins us. Wild NFL weekend. We'll run it all down with him. That's next. Phone lines are open. Use them. Do you love football? Do you live for Monday nights? Do you like money? Then I've got your plan. Get with the program. Get on down to Hooters. Catch the game and Monday Night Moneyball. Every week, you are just a few questions away from making some money. You can win cash prizes and free Hooters food and drinks. Easy to play, and it works like making prop picks. Who's going to win? Could be you. And it couldn't get any easier, and it's free to play. You love wings. You love ice-cold beer. Who doesn't love the world-famous Hooters girls? There is no better place to get your sports fix on, and now you can get in on the action. If you've got game, head to Hooters, watch all the games, eat, drink, and play for all the marbles with Hooters Monday Night Moneyball. Happening at your local Hooters and HootersMoneyBall.com. Register now. Head to Hooters for every game all season long.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Right back at it. I am Jim Rome. Great to be with you on this Monday. As promised, we are joined by an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He appears every Sunday on the NFL Today. Very good friend of this program, Jason Lockenfora. Jason, how you doing? Good to have you.
What's going on, buddy? Long time no see.
Long time no see. In fact, you and I saw each other yesterday on the NFL Today. That's what you're talking about. 24 hours later, are you at all surprised, Jason, that Jay Gruden was fired this morning?
No, The only surprise is that he lasted, you know, into a sixth season, which that's an eternity by Redskins coaching standards. I mean, they should induct him into the Ring of Honor right now, Romy. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to surpass that anytime soon. He was the one coach to get two contracts out of Dan Snyder. But that relationship has soured for quite some time, really dating back to even last season. There's been clashes about the staff and defensive coordinators in particular. I mean, remember, I was reporting in the spring that Dan Snyder was having his own interviews with potential defensive coordinators before they fired Greg Minuski. You know, and they didn't fire Greg Minuski in the end. So, like, that happened. You know, the coach and the GM, Doug Williams, aren't aware often when big moves are made, like, oh, trading for Alex Smith and then giving him a huge new contract when you didn't have to. There were some philosophical differences about the direction of the franchise and where they were headed back in the spring. So to people close to that situation, people close to Dan Snyder, people close to Jay Gruden, this is not a surprise at all. And as we talked about in the NFL Today a couple of Sundays ago, expect Jay Gruden to end up running the Raiders offense in Vegas by next season as a part of his brother John's staff.
Jason Lockenfora joining us. All right, Jason, you've also raised the idea that Dan Snyder would like to have Mike Tomlin as head coach.
Sir.
How interested would Tomlin be in that gig, and how likely is it that he could end up there?
Well, he's got 1 year on a Steelers deal. It's hard to handicap it. It's not without precedent that teams acquire coaches. It's happened several times in the past. Hasn't happened all that recently, right? I guess John Gruden, you know, going from Oakland to Tampa is the last one that leaps out to me, excuse me, although the Browns and 49ers had discussions about a Jim Harbaugh trade not that long ago. Would he be open to it? I don't know. There's some close to him who feel like, you know, a change of scenery wouldn't be the end of the world. He'd certainly get more money and more power in Washington than any coach would have in Pittsburgh. It's just not their model. He has ties to Doug Williams, the GM, and Bruce Allen, the team president, from their time together in Tampa. And he's got 1 year left on his deal, so it's not like he signed, you know, a three-year extension or something last year. Would the Rooneys entertain something sort of outside the box like this? Some would say no, and their history might say no, but there's others who would point out, well, they did just give up a lot of draft capital to take Devin Bush 10th overall, right? And they did just trade a one for Minka Fitzpatrick that, now that they're down to their third quarterback, might be a pretty high one. And, you know, Ben's not getting any younger, and would there be a natural time to make some changes? The GM, Kevin Colbert, didn't sign an extension. So we'll see, Jim. I will certainly be paying a lot of attention to this in the coming weeks. I can tell you that much.
Jason Lockenfora is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. Jason, you mentioned the Steelers. You've covered the NFL for a really long time. What was your reaction when you saw that hit that Mason Rudolph took yesterday against the Ravens?
It's unfortunate. You hate to see anything like that. Obviously, Earl Thomas has to do a much better job of staying away from the head and neck region, and in this situation, you know, Rudolph was even more vulnerable because he was getting hit from behind. He was already sort of elevated and you know, taking on one impact when he got, you know, blown up from the other direction. You know, thankfully, you know, he was able to kind of walk off, at least with some help, and released from the hospital last night. Everything I've heard, you know, is a diagnosis of a concussion, no other medical issues that the Steelers were aware of last night. I'm sure a big fine is forthcoming for Earl Thomas. It's unfortunate for Mason Rudolph, obviously, for numerous reasons. You know, no timetable yet on when he comes back. Devlin Hodges, though, I got to say, he has some Gardner Minshew in him. Like, I was intrigued by what I saw. He seemed fearless. He seemed very confident, and he has like a little energy and a spark to him. You know, the Steelers took a flyer on him out of Sanford. He may get a chance to play a little bit here in the ongoing year, the backup quarterback, Jim. And I don't know, man. They're a little bit intrigued by him. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he had some it. He certainly had some it and gave them a bit of a spark. You hate to see a guy get an opportunity like that because that was such a terrifying hit.
Ooh.
But I think you're right. He showed something. Jason Lockenfora, my guest. You also tweeted last night, and I quote, "Frank Reich is a bad man." How impressed were you, Jason, with how the Colts showed up last night in KC?
Not surprised, because this has been their MO. You know, they are a tough out. And when they're down, they don't stay down long, whether that's through, you know, a coach sort of saying, I'm going to take the job, and then bailing on them. You know, whether that's a kid who some would say, I should say, kid, he got to be, well, he's not a kid anymore. I think of these guys as rookies. But, you know, a young quarterback in Andrew Luck who decided to retire right before the season. You know, they've had some adversity, and obviously they didn't play their A game a week ago against the Raiders. And I just love Frank Reich's willingness to do whatever it takes to win this yard, to win this play, to win this series, to win this game, you know, and then we'll worry about next week. And, you know, Jacoby Brissett has thrown a lot of touchdowns this year, but that wasn't in the cards yesterday. And they wanted to keep Mahomes off the field, and they wanted it to play sort of old-school brass knuckles, you know, 1970s Big Ten football. They wanted to outman you at the point of attack, and they did that. You know, I thought when Luck went down, I still said, hey, if I'm a betting man, I'm going to Vegas and taking the Colts to win that division. I think they'll win 10-plus games. The coach is smart enough to guide them through this, and Jacoby Brissett is a gamer. And I like their chances in that division. And I don't rule out them, you know, getting a top two seed. The AFC could get pretty crazy here. I mean, why not the Colts?
It was a wild weekend. Jason Lockenfora joins me for another moment or two. Jason, in your news and notes segment yesterday that you and I did for the NFL on CBS, we talked about the trade deadline coming up.
Yeah.
And we talked about the possibility of Denver having a fire sale. Then they go out and they beat the Chargers. So how do you think Denver approaches the time from now until the deadline? Does that change anything?
No, I mean, they're obviously probably not going to be trading any pending free agents and engaging in Von Miller trade talks this week. It won't stop teams from calling. They still have an uphill climb. You know, Joe Flacco is not their quarterback of the future. And could they end up having a respectable season? Perhaps. But are they going to get to the playoffs? No. And do they need to make cold, hard, calculated decisions about their future? Yes. Do they need draft capital in the worst way possible? Yes. The offensive line is not good. They're going to need pass catchers. And the bottom line, Jim, is that guys like Chris Harris, Derek Wolfe, Emmanuel Sanders, they're not going to end up re-signing there anyway. So I do expect them to be sellers. Will they go wholesale and include a guy like Von Miller if the value's right? No one knows the answer to that yet. But they are going to be given myriad opportunities to consider that between now and October 29th.
And Jason, finally, it does not look like Atlanta is going to have a, quote, respectable season.
No.
They're 1-4 after that humiliating loss to Houston, 53-32. JLC, when you consider that nearly every team is able to get pressure on Deshaun Watson, how bad is it for the Falcons that they were unable to do so?
Bad. Bad. That Atlanta, they just can't put it together for any period of time. The problem had been coming out of games sleepwalking, you know, entering games sleepwalking. They played a pretty good first half yesterday and then got absolutely steamrolled in the second half. They are just non-competitive for long stretches every week, and that's not what's required in professional football. You know, that's the expectations are much higher than that, and this team thought, because they were getting healthier this year after all the injuries of a year ago, that they were going to take off. And instead, they look worse in many ways than they did last year, particularly the defense. And that's Dan Quinn's bread and butter. You know, I don't think he's sort of on the minute-to-minute high alert that Jay Gruden's been on the last few weeks. But I also don't know anybody who talks to Arthur Blank who thinks that owner is going to be patient too much longer. He doesn't want to do something in season, but go check out their schedule. They haven't even hit the meat of the schedule yet. Go look week 7 to 14. Murderer's Row is awaiting, and there's a lot of people kind of looking at that situation saying at some point Arthur Blank may want to get a jump on finding his next guy.
He is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He appears every single Sunday on the NFL Today. Good friend of the program, Jason Lockenfora. Jason, really appreciate it. Had a great time seeing you yesterday. I will see you in a few weeks.
All right. Can't wait, buddy. Look forward to it. Thank you.
You too, JLC. Thank you. JLC, Jason Lockenfora, all over the league and breaking it all down. Mike Tomlin to the Redskins. Could you imagine that? I could see why they'd want to hire him. I cannot see why he'd want to go there. But Jason makes good points. More money. More power, change of scenery, something different. Like, I mean, I could argue that there's no such thing as a bad NFL job. There's only 32 NFL head coaching jobs. Therefore, there are no bad jobs. Or would there be? If you go there and you go to that organization and you work for that owner and that management crew, you're going to have problems. Is it a problem if they make a trade for a quarterback and don't tell the coach or the GM? 1-800-636-8686. I remember when I first got into horse racing and somebody told me they were working with a trainer. I said, how's that go for you? He said, well, he runs the horse and doesn't tell me. And you were the owner. I said, that's not good. That's not positive. When we come back, we talk some baseball. Tyler Kepner is my guest. You know, when I went to New York on Saturday, I got this text from the airline that said, your flight has been delayed 11 hours. 11 hours. And at first I thought that it was some one of you clones messing with me, but it was not. The flight literally was delayed 11 hours. It was not as good as finding out that I was first on the downgrade list, but it was the second best thing. Not 11 minutes. Not 1 hour. 11 hours. More on that a little bit later on. Tyler Kepner when we come back. But first, here's a sports update for you.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Buy yourself some time because I've got back-to-back interviews in hour number one. So think about what you want to hit me up with. And then I'm going to roll telephone calls in the second hour. 1-800-636-8686. We're joined right now by a national baseball writer for the New York Times. Also the author of K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. Tyler Kepner is my guest. Tyler, always good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you?
Good, really good. All right, let me start in the Dodgers and Nationals series. You were in Washington last night for that.
Yep.
Washington had got a two-run home run from Juan Soto in the first. They were leading 2-1. Tyler going to the sixth. Knowing they had Max Scherzer going in game four today, what was your sense as to what the mood in the park was like at that point in the game?
Well, it was pretty confident because, you know, they had it scripted just as they wanted. You know, if they could have said before the game that you would get five innings from Anibal Sanchez and a 2-1 lead, they would take it. Now, you could argue maybe they should have tried to keep going with him. But at the time, bringing in Patrick Corbin looked like the right move. I mean, he's one of their best pitchers. He did pretty well, even though we lost game one. And you figure that he can get you through that sixth, seventh inning to the back end of the bullpen. But instead, the Dodgers had the greatest postseason inning they've ever had. Literally their first seven-run inning in all of their postseasons going back over 100 years. So it just completely blew up on the Nationals.
Tyler Kepner, it absolutely did. For those who did not see it, Sanchez gets taken out. Corbin comes in. Cody Bellinger leads off the inning with a single. The next two batters strike out, but then David Freese pinch hits for Gavin Lux. He singles to right. Bellinger goes to third. Russell Martin follows that up with a two-run double. The floodgates open up. L.A. scores seven with two outs. Seven with two outs. What were you thinking as you saw that inning unfold?
Well, it was crazy because all the run-scoring hits were with two strikes. So Corbin was so close to getting out of it. And you're right. I mean, you know, yeah, the Bellinger hit, but then strikeout, and then Freeze hits a little grounder through the shift in right, so you don't worry too much about that. Martin gets down two strikes, but the Dodgers just kept battling, and that's what they do. They've seen a lot of Corbin, not only in game one, but a lot of them have seen him a lot in the NL West. So they took so many good at-bats, they were able to read that slider of his, which is so good. And when he got it up a little bit, they pounced. So really professional at-bats and just a great example of what the Dodgers do, which is the ability to counter any move out of the bullpen by flipping their lineup with professional hitters like Freeze and Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez. And there you go. I mean, the Dodgers can counteract whatever you want to do out of your bullpen.
Tyler Kepner is my guest. You know, now one more thought about them hitting as well as they do with two strikes. David Freeze said afterwards, quote, you look at the best guys that have ever played this game, they look like they like two strikes. I watched Albert Pujols do it for 10 years living in St. Louis and playing with him. Guys like that, it's incredible, end quote. So when you're facing a lineup of guys who almost like hitting with two strikes, how much more pressure does that put on the opposing pitching staff?
Yeah, it was. But you figure, and you know, the Nationals, to their credit, have managed this aggressively, and I think, you know, they're trying not to repeat some of their mistakes they've made in the past, you know, by sticking with maybe overmatched middle relievers or stuff. I mean, they're going for it. They've got their best guys out there,
but even that doesn't always work. We saw it worked great with Scherzer the other night in the eighth inning, and then they survived the rocky ninth with Hudson. But they had the matchup they wanted, and yes, it does put a lot of pressure on the pitcher. You got to be perfect and really fine. And when you make a couple mistakes, they're going to capitalize. But they had the right guys in the right spot. It just didn't work out.
Tyler, it seems to me that when things go well, Dave Roberts doesn't really get any credit. And if things don't go well, he's always the first guy that people want to single out. What do you make of how he handled his bench in that inning?
Oh, I think it was great. I mean, I think that's how the Dodgers are built. Sometimes they get a little too cute, maybe. Like, you can look back and say, you know, the elimination game in the World Series last year, Game 5, that Bellinger didn't play, and they had Kiki Hernandez bat in third and everything. So sometimes they can get a little too matchup heavy, but a lot of times it really does work, and it gives them a huge edge. I mean, it's hard to do what they're doing. Seven straight division titles and going for the third straight NL crown. It's just because they haven't won a World Series. It shouldn't take away from just how deep this lineup is and how good Roberts is at using it.
Tyler Kepner is my guest. All right, so how different does the series feel to you after the sixth inning with the Dodgers going to today's game with a chance to end it as opposed to facing Max Scherzer to stay alive?
Well, it's just completely flips, right, John? I mean, think about, you know, if the Nats had won, then tonight they've got a chance to close it out with their guy on the mound. But instead, now they're just fighting for their lives. That's why the division series is so fun, because it's a lightning round, and things can change like that. I mean, what a day in baseball. We got four potential series-ending games today, so a lot on the line. We could have the LCS set by the end of the night. I don't think we will. I think someone will survive. But yeah, it just completely changes it, because the Dodgers, like they were saying, hey, you know, like, we got a shot to close this thing up. Worst case, we're going back home for Game 5, and we can win it there. But the worst case, if you were facing Scherzer, facing elimination, is much, much worse. So yeah, it's a big, big game tonight, but more so for Washington than L.A.
Tyler Kepner is joining us for a few more moments. Now, you and I have talked about pitching in the past. In fact, you literally wrote the book on it, K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. Knowing that, how do you explain what Justin Verlander has done over the course of the season and then in Game 1 of the ALDS?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, he has really when you say a pitcher's adapted, you know, you think, I go more to guys like Frank Tanana or CeCe Sabathia, who lose their stuff and then change the kind of pitcher they are. Verlander has adapted, but by still kind of keeping the same stuff. He's adapted to understanding that it's even more of a strikeout game now, and to hear out what the Astros say about how to use your pitches and then just execute with brutal efficiency, attacking these guys. And he's been amazing. I mean, one hit the other night, it's either guy, him or Cole, would be a historic kind of Cy Young season. They both struck out 300. Verlander had more innings and gave up fewer hits, but Cole had more strikeouts with slightly better ERA. I mean, it is scary to watch those two in tandem, and it doesn't always work, right? I mean, we saw when the Phillies brought in Halliday and Lee, and they didn't win a championship. There's many examples of that. But sometimes you get that special season, whether it's a Koufax Drysdale or, you know, a Johnson Schilling, and this really could be one of those years, because these guys are just at the top of their game here in October, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
Tyler Kepner joining us. Listen, it doesn't always work. Stacking aces has not guaranteed a World Series in recent years. So if you're the Astros, how do you go about trying to avoid that recent trend? What should they do?
Well, it's not going to be easy, because, certainly the Yankees, if they get to that round, are tough and can hit. But I do feel like the Yankees have holes in their swings that great pitchers can exploit. And let's not forget Greinke either. The Astros bullpen, it looks vulnerable. It looks, but I think it may only be in comparison to the starters, because they did have the third best bullpen ERA this year. They've struggled a little bit in the first two games, so maybe that's how you get to them. But so far the formula's worked. I think the problem will be if the Yankees or some team can somehow succeed in fouling off a bunch of pitches and getting those guys out of there, and getting to that bullpen. But, you know, on paper, those guys should be good enough. You know, Presley and Harris and Ozuna had a really good year. So the Astros look great right now. But, you know, then again, the Yankees are also really good, and so are the Dodgers. There are three super teams right now, Jim. And, you know, if they all could wind up in the LCS, they all should wind up in the LCS probably. And then we'll see where it takes us. But it's a fascinating time in baseball.
So before you go, Tyler, if that's the way that goes, and most do believe that the Astros and the Yankees are on a collision course, how do you see that series going?
Well, I think in the end, I would go with the Astros only because of what we've seen the last couple of years, which is that ability to both slug and make contact is usually what has won lately. Certainly the Yankees could win. I mean, they're very, very good. I wrote the other day that the Astros are better than they were in 17, and they are, but so are the Yankees, as a lot of readers reminded me. The Yankees have a really deep lineup as well. I just feel like Houston is deeper overall. Their lineup just doesn't end. It's going to be an epic series, but I would give Houston the slight edge just because I feel like there's fewer moves that Hinch has to make. I mean, if his starters go deep in the games, which they tend to do, there's just fewer margin, fewer ways he can mess things up. Whereas the Yankees can, you bring in Ottavino, you bring in Canely, you bring in, Britton and Green and these guys, like one of them might have a bad day and that could ruin the game like it did last night with Corbin.
I agree with you. Epic, epic potential matchup, but I think the Yankees are definitely looking up at Houston. I think Houston's got the edge there. Tyler Kepner is a national baseball writer for the New York Times, also the author of K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. Tyler, great to have you back. Thanks so much for doing that.
All right, thanks a lot, Jim. Always like joining you.
You too. Always enjoy it. Tyler Kepner, that's an excellent book. And Dodger fans, you get up here and in here and own this. How were you feeling last night when you were down 2-1 going into the sixth, knowing that you might have to beat Max Scherzer to stay alive? How hard were you gripping? And then that inning. Kike Hernandez said afterwards, quote, "The Dodgers showed up in the sixth inning." Pretty accurate. Pretty accurate. Better late than never. And then when they showed up, man, it was scary. When you had that many professional hitters who were that comfortable hitting with two strikes and did all that damage with two outs, that was the Dodgers. The team that we saw all regular season. Let's get some reaction here to end hour number one. And we don't have another interview until hour number three, so we're wide open. Hard Rocks, 24 tweets. Coach like trash, smoke weed, get fired like Jay Gruden. Smoke weed, talk like Lane Kiffin. Like I said, the second best day of his life was getting that gig. The best day of his life was losing that gig. 5 a.m. Got off that nice little zinger. Yeah, I'm not worried about any of that. If the key works, I'm going to work. Except the key didn't work today. Ed Squirrel 2 tweets, "You're fired, fat ass." Signed, Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen.
I hope you're in your car listening to me right now, you fat ass. You are despicable because you just let that happen to your star quarterback. And don't tell me you know more than me because you're some head coach. You're an idiot. You're a moron. No one, I don't care who you are, no one does that to a star player in the NFL except you, you loser.
Scotty nailed that. Scotty knew.
Fat ass.
Scotty Farrell knew. He was on that early. He was way out in front of that. And again, I'm going to say that he's happy. He doesn't have to go to work at that trash site anymore.
You have a big dump.
And get the trash dump, exactly. Now he can go work with his bro. Hey, and by the way, credit where credit's due. I didn't see the Raiders doing to the Bears what the Raiders did to the Bears. I didn't see the Raiders doing to the Colts what the Raiders did to the Colts. Especially when you see what the Colts did to the Chiefs. But what does that tell you? What that tells you is you don't know jack. None of us do about the NFL. This email reads, "Hey, Rome, man, what a laughingstock of a coaching job in the nation's capital. Today is the day we are counting on you to really lay out the failures of Jay Gruden in long form. Take all the time you need, flex on him good. Dude skated under the radar for way too long. Very truly yours, Dan Quinn." Well done, Vadi. That's a good email. Hour number two, straight ahead. I've got a recap of the NFL weekend. I normally do that at the top of hour number one on a Monday, but Jay Gruden getting fired was the lead story. All of that and your phone calls straight ahead.